Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
WGR.
Here's the American dream. Dusty Rhodes and Dusty, your fans welcome you back, man.
Sports Radio 550.
I don't have to say a lot more about the way I feel about
Sports Talk Saturday.
No respect, no honor. There is no honor among thieves in the first place. He put hard times on Dusty Rhodes and his family. You don't know what hard times are, Daddy. Hard times are when the textile workers around this country are out of work. They got four or five kids and can't pay their wages, can't buy their food. Hard times are when the auto workers are out of work and they tell them go home. And hard times are when a man has worked at a job 30 years. They give him a watch, kick him in the butt, and say, hey, a computer took your place, Daddy. That's hard time.
Want to talk to the guys on Sports Talk Saturday? Call or text us now.
You put hard times on this country by taking Dusty Rhodes out. That's hard time.
Sports Talk Saturday on WGR.
My mic. Oh, it does work. Okay, good. I think I didn't, you know, swear at this thing and say, oh, damn it, this button's not working. I was trying to press the button. Listen, I don't know, you guys, I don't know if you're, you know how buttons work. Usually when you press the button that you want to use, it lights up to indicate, yes, you've been pressed.
So the mistake is to think that there's one button. There isn't. There's 10.
There are 10 buttons, right, just in general. And in radio stations, which is why I'm actually not allowed in your position anymore, because there's too many buttons. And a simpleton like me, too many buttons can overwhelm a guy like
me. It's not like Star Trek The Next Generation, where it's just a blank screen with the lights, and you just touch the screen like an iPad. That's not what it looks like. It looks more like the original series Star Trek, with all the little big glass buttons that you hear the big click. That's what our stuff looks like, and there's a lot of them.
There's too many.
Gotta press the right one.
I like touch screens. Touch screens have helped with my ADHD, you know?
I'm a tactile guy. I need to feel the click.
Ah, see, no, I'm all about, I just want consistency in my life.
Give me switches, give me doodads.
Oh, no, gosh, no. No.
I want a button that affirmatively lights up when you press it in and turns off when you punch it out.
I have an announcement to make.
Oh, hang on. Wait, I got a thing for that. Hang on, I gotta find it.
Okay, that's fine.
Okay, thanks. Wait, thank you for your patience. Okay, here we go. I found it.
So, the little breaking news for the kids that are along. And I said 11:05, so if you're tuning in a little after this, you might have to go on demand to listen to my it's pretty big announcement. Life move for me. I decided, Corey, that I'm going to do something so stunningly brave that my grandkids, their grandkids, if we still have a Earth by the time my grandkids are having grandkids, which
50-50,
maybe. Just a side note, I was watching The Office yesterday, and it was the episode where right when Michael's about to leave with what's her name? Come on, you've watched the series.
No, sure. I haven't.
Okay. Well, anyways, Michael's about to leave the show.
Right.
Because him and his new wife, he proposes. But this episode starts with Dwight is eating all of his bunker rations. He has
the MREs.
Yes, and they're all about to expire. So he takes them out and he eats them and then replenishes the right.
Correct.
So, you know, he says, you know, he's like, it could be a month when I'm actually going to need all this. And all of you guys are going to want to come down to my bunker. I'm not going to let you in. And Jim and Dwight, they have this like little thing. And he's like, could it be 2 months? And Dwight's like, could be. He's like, 3 months, probably. 4 months. It's not out of the question.
Right.
And he just keeps going. 5 months. And then they like kind of pan to the show starting and then they go back and Jim says, 2,341 days. Can't be, right? He said, I could see that happening. Like it just kind of keeps going on and on. I have no reason for that story coming up other than to say I have this big announcement to make.
Okay. That's a reset. We call that a reset.
Stunningly brave were the words that my dad and my girlfriend told me, Nate. We believe in you. We know what you're capable of doing, and we couldn't be more proud of you for doing something so brave and so stunning.
Okay.
It is with regret, but you know, cautious optimism. I purchased a Sabres ticket for this afternoon. I will be going to the Sabres game today.
Oh, boy.
Now,
listen.
A 3 p.m. game.
From what I understand, there are good seats still available.
I feel like a pervert.
What, like you're going to be put on a watch list?
Like, I am going. Not only am I going to a Sabres game, it's the preseason.
Like, as soon as you hit the purchase button, the big FBI logo comes up on the desktop screen.
It's at 3 p.m. in the afternoon. I'm doing it in the daylight.
It's not a drug deal.
What is my problem, Corey?
I mean, look, it's because you've got a fever, and the only prescription is Don Granato.
More meatballs. That's more meatball. Oh.
There's two things you love. Shots on goal and saves. And you're going to get it.
I'm going to get those in bunches.
That's correct.
Today, in bunches.
Absolutely. You might see upwards of 20 shots on goal for the Buffalo Sabres this game, and you're going to be thrilled by it. You're just going to be.
I don't know what I'm doing. So listen, my neck has been bothering me very, very badly the last couple of days. I've got some kind of pinch situation. Every couple of months this happens to me. So I have not golfed.
Oh, the Sabres have a guy you can talk to about
They do. I have not been able to golf since I came back from my trip in Boston. So it's been literally 7 days since the last time I've picked up a golf club.
How is that not the announcement?
that's a good point. So today I was yesterday, today and tomorrow, because we have a 3 p.m. pregame. Mm-hmm. I was going to golf in the morning. I'm not sure I'm going to be able to now. So I decided today, my buddy and I that were going to golf, I said, listen, dude, I'm really sorry. Can't do it. I'm not trying to ditch you or anything. I'm not well. If I swing a golf club, I could really hurt myself. So I was like, let me make it up to you.
Gonna make it up to you now.
Let me take you to a Sabres preseason game. And frankly, the fact that my friend didn't laugh me off. But this friend of mine, he was my college roommate. He recently shared a Facebook post with me, which is funny, from like 2011 or something.
Sure.
When we were in college.
Sure.
And it was essentially, bro, can you believe this lineup? Robin Regier? Dude, who's going to stop this Sabres team?
Oh, boy.
Hold on, I have it in my text messages. I should really get this for you.
Christian Ehrhoff wasn't all bad for the Sabres. Like, it wasn't. Oh, God.
Okay, wait. Here it goes. Okay. I posted this September 21st, 2011.
Give me a Villy. There's got to be a Villy Leno reference in here.
Vanek, Roy, Pominville, top line.
Yep.
Ennis, Leno, Stafford, second line.
Mm-hmm.
Adam, Boys, Gerby, third line. Ellis, Cashian, Foligno, fourth line. Regier Erhoff, top pairing. Here's the best one. Myers and Grignani. Let's go.
Yeah.
I don't even know the third pairing. I don't. Scheistel sure. and Persson.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's that team in 2011, they made the playoffs?
Wait. Here's his response that, to this post.
Is that the last playoff year?
Yes, 11. This is his response. Quote, dude, our regular season lineups are going to be so good.
They did make the playoffs. They made the playoffs. You guys didn't even get to Miller yet. They still had Miller.
Oh, God. I hate my life. That was too funny not to share it with everybody on the radio.
What are we going to do about the huge void in Sabres history that we are now in right now? And because whenever we come out of the void, we're going to remember the players that are good and the Sabres are good and make the playoffs and we'll have connections with them. Because the Sabres were always so intimate.
Craft beer.
Right? The Sabres felt small. Like,
yeah.
Like everybody knew the Sabres. Everybody had connections to the Sabres. Like, for as much as, you know, the Bills are important to the community, the Sabres felt much more intimate.
Well, yeah, way more intimate.
So that intimacy has been lost with how bad they've been for as long as they have been. We knew all the obscure alumni for the Sabres, and they mattered, right? Like, Fred Stanfield recently passed away, and like everybody knew Fred Stanfield. Like Morris Titanic was a guy who played in all the alumni games out at like Norktown Center or something like that, and people just knew him. I was like, oh yeah, cool, that's Morris Titanic, and just like a guy. Like let's remember some Sabres guys. But everybody,
Grant Ledyard, baby,
everybody could remember. Shout out to Yuri Himalev, bless up. Everybody could remember some Sabres guys, and like now when we do that here at the station or out on the streets. It's like, oh my God. It's like a reactivation of like PTSD about remembering the names of people. It's not a connection of like, oh yeah, cool. I remember going to the arena or going to the Odd and watching that guy play. And I remember the Sabres, you know, being competitive. And it's a totally different interaction with the Sabres of these past 10 years. And like going to the arena now is like in the deepest throes of that. Like I'm absolutely fascinated by the experience you are going to have today.
I feel like I have a connection with what was that show or that movie that came out
2001 A Space Odyssey
in the late 90s
The Matrix,
where it was like really ruggedly filmed and it was about witches in the woods.
You're talking about the Blair Witch Project.
The Blair Witch Project. So I feel oddly connected to the directors of the Blair Witch Project.
Could we get some found footage from the depths of the arena?
So I feel like I should document some of the tropes and some of the things that I'm going to see when I get
to the arena.
Just
gonna catch you standing in the corner of a urinal.
Because here's the thing. You have to be a real sicko to be going to this game. And I feel like these are the sort of people that make their way out twice a year. They go to the fair for one day. And then the other time they go out is for a Sabres preseason game. And I'm going to meet that person today. And, like, I saw pictures the other day of what the arena looked like during the preseason game.
Sure.
And it was a ghost town. They said there were 6,000 tickets dispersed. And I would say if there were 700 people there.
Look, that's certainly a word to use to talk about people attending your sporting event. Well, we've dispersed the tickets. Like, you've dispersed a big cloud of mosquitoes from outside upstanding water.
Disperse!
So, if you went to the game, could you do a sports update from the stands and just shout it at the mic from the crowd and we'd hear you?
So, funny that you say this. I recently was just doing a guest bartending gig for the American Cancer Society. I'm doing Real Men Wear Pink and I'm raising money for cancer research. And they asked Sale, who was also guest bartending at the time.
Yep.
Sale, could you announce the winner of this raffle? And Sale's trying to yell over everyone. It's a big room, big bar. And I said, Sale, give me the ticket.
Right.
Let me do this. And I said, excuse me. And the whole room stopped talking.
See?
No microphone.
Use your teacher voice.
No. I used my quarterback voice, which is very different. I could talk over a small crowd of at least 1,000 people. That I know that my voice has those capabilities.
Shouting random cities in Midwest
states. I believe there's a very good chance that I could do play-by-play from the 300 level and have everyone in that arena hear me.
I mean, well, yeah, sure.
Without a microphone.
Absolutely.
Live.
Mm-hmm.
Live play-by-play. So, I someone asked me, well, why really, though? Like, why are you going? And I said,
to watch a hockey game
watch
in theory.
I just want to watch hockey.
Watch a hockey game in theory.
And, you know, listen, this is funny, but, you know, you're talking about this connection thing, right? Like how Sabres fans for a very long time had this connection. And by the way, I don't think there's any, you know, I think there's a direct correlation. There's a straight line between the craft brewing, you know, the craft breweries take off here in Buffalo and the Sabres demise. One went up right as the other went down. So I don't think that's a coincidence at all.
Really?
I believe craft beer has taken the place of Sabres hockey. However, what I will say, I sort of miss, I don't want to say caring, because I watched every game last year. Like Bulldog. Like Bulldog and I joke about this when we're on the air together.
That's sicko.
Yes, it is. And 2 years ago, I was in Iceland. No, I'm sorry. This would have been pre-pandemic.
Right.
So the Sabres were just starting their season. It was bad. It was not a good start to the season, as you might imagine. The lockout year.
Why?
Not lockout
year.
I don't know. We were in Iceland.
Okay.
On vacation in Iceland in November.
And you were watching it on the stream.
At 2 a.m.
Yeah, baby. Let's go. It's good times. How else are you going to get down?
Mm-hmm.
There, I mean, Iceland, a land of natural beauty and wonder. Northern lights. Fantastic scenery, all the splendors of nature around you. So, of course, you're going to get crunk watching them put up a 30% Corsi rating on a random November early morning.
Yeah. Sabres hockey.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I'm trying to explain to people, set the stage for people of like, what's a guy like you going to this game for today?
And you're struggling with some problems, so that's why going.
Here's the thing too, and I was listening this week when they were talking with Paul Hamilton about, you know, I think the issues this team's going to have filling this arena in the regular season, and we're talking about, you know, not having the Southern Ontario folks and season ticket holders being able to cross the border even during those Toronto games that we know, even in the Sabres heydays,
Penguins games, Montreal games, Toronto games, like all the like those kinds of games that would just Vancouver and Calgary game, like any Canadian team,
they're not going to be able to pull and draw the other team's fans, so it's going to be lowly.
That's right.
I think the crappy part is going to be accessibility. And what I mean by this is, I think they've lost a lot of season ticket holders. I'm not here to speculate on the number of them. I just know that it's a lot of them.
I mean, professional sports, especially at the level of the Sabres or the Bills or anybody else on that tier, is just hard to invest in when the teams are bad because the cost is so prohibitive. And I mean, the Bills are only going to get higher if they build a new stadium that require PSLs and stuff like that. The cost is only going to double or triple for people to go to these games. It's not like the Bisons. Like, if you go to the Bisons games and you get season tickets for the Bisons, you're not even thinking about how good the team is. That's irrelevant.
Care.
You go because it's just a baseball game.
It's a Friday
game.
Night.
It's a Friday night, or it's an afternoon game.
I will say this about the
it's
great
also
thing that the
not
Bisons,
terribly expensive.
No, it's not. And you can take your family of four out and not drain your bank account doing
it.
And not literally be on Sunday wondering, okay, well, that was fun, and my kids had a blast. We bought some hot dogs, and now I have to take out a reverse mortgage on my home.
Even when you hear people talk about, I have Sabres season tickets, like, nobody goes 41 games. Like, have you ever heard someone say, like, yeah, I got Sabres season tickets. I go every game, man. It's like, no one can afford it. They say, like, we have season tickets. I got, like, 10 tickets, you know, like, something like that. They split them.
They split.
Even from the start.
Yeah. Yeah, the game day experience thing has been sort of like, this isn't like a new thing for any of us, really. So I'm just excited to be at a hockey game. And I've got this just weird thing where I'm a little excited about these young guys. Listen, there is something to be said about youth in sports and professional sports, like Dylan Cousins, and thinking about some of these young guys. Youth in sports still has this innocence about it. Like is that the right way of putting it? Like young players, and this goes beyond just the NHL. This goes in the NBA and the NFL as well, but like particularly in hockey. Because hockey, you especially in this area, it's such a youth game. There are a lot of young kids. This is a great youth hockey like town and area. And I think about one of the reasons I'm actually excited about this team a little bit. I'm bracing for them to be bad, but like weirdly feeling they could not be just unwatchable, right? Like that's sort of how I feel about them. Is like I feel like oddly enough, for as little name power and recognition they have on the roster, that they may not be like completely unwatchable, which is, you know, like a weird conundrum to have. But part of my draw right now, and maybe this will wear off like this afternoon after the first period, I don't know. Corey, I don't know how you feel about this, but I guess my draw towards this season feels oddly like the innocence of young guys, not like being corrupted by the game. Right? Like, and maybe that sounds weird. Maybe I put that weird. But like, these are young players, almost every single one of them.
They don't have to be polluted by the tank.
Yeah, right. Like, this is their own, like, era of sorts or something.
I think that it's plausible to think that way, but I think that also requires the idea that, like, they're going to improve. Because if they never improve, this era just falls flat, and then they go someplace else, and then that's the end of that, right? So, but this is why I believe we were so anxious about moving on from certain players in the organization, like, so anxiously. Like,
they just seemed... like poisoned,
right? Like, and I mean, unfortunately, Ristolainen was the poster boy.
Yes,
but like, why we were all like, "Can you just get rid of this guy already?"
But like, you
and
have
why he was asking to go
year after year after year of like, you know, bad hockey and disappointment and lack of results. Like, you sort of saw a guy in Ristolainen like after his rookie year. Okay. Second year, third year, fourth year, fifth year. And you just sort of like see his shoulders come to the ground.
Right.
Like, please get me out of here. And you see a very opposite new era of players. Like, I'm thinking of Dylan Cousins in this. And you can probably call in and tell me that there's 15 other players you're thinking about as an example of what I'm talking about here. But there's a real sense of like excitement around it. Like, they're excited for an opportunity to prove people wrong. They're excited for an opportunity as in an elevated role that Casey Mittelstadt, that Dylan Cousins probably will never actually be. Like, Casey Mittelstadt's not a top six player in the NHL, but he's going to have the opportunity to showcase that he could be and should be a top six player.
They're still...
And very rarely in pro sports do you get opportunities for young guys to show that they can play in an elevated role without the pressure of actually doing good.
Yeah.
There's no pressure for them
to
do good.
Well, the thing is that they're still going to lose a bunch of games probably. Mm-hmm. They're predicted to, at least. So what effect will that have over the long term? Will it take that the edge off that? How will they react to losing badly?
Yeah.
Because the other guys who we
had lose badly a lot.
They weren't supposed to lose badly all the time, and they ended up losing badly all the time, and it destroyed them. So, like, let's see what happens to these guys. Will these, like, when you're next, you blow the whistle, the guys go over the top like it's the Battle of the Somme. Like, is it going to be the same? Like, are they going to come back with the 2,000-yard stare or not? I don't know. Maybe this will be the one to do it. Is it 1918 or is it 1917?
That's the real question.
We're going to find out.
We are going to find out very soon. And part of this discussion, right, and I was talking about availability of tickets before I got in this, you know, feel-good story about innocence and youth.
Here I am giving you the World War I poetry.
This is what they come to expect from us on Sports Talk Saturday, Corey.
Absolute sickos.
And
as previously mentioned.
Wait, I talked about, like, you know, they're defectors of season ticket holders. If there aren't a lot of season ticket holders and there's not a secondary market like there's been in previous years where you can buy a 100-level $9 ticket, that's going to hurt this even more because no one's going to go pay face value at the ticket at the box office for games.
No.
I mean, they weren't doing that for the last 5 years. What they were doing was banking on the fact that season ticket holders will literally take whatever it takes to recoup 15% of what they've spent on these tickets. So, hey, sure, I'll sell these for $6. I'll sell these for $14, five rows up from the ice. Sure, I'm not going, so someone else might as well go. And that's a time where even if you're a bad hockey team, you will have people that are sports fans, that are hockey fans, going out of principle alone. This has turned into the Bisons. where you are not breaking. I don't mind a $6.50 hot dog so much when I'm spending $4 for these 300-level tickets.
That's
and
right.
My 7-year-old kid can come to a game and enjoy the experience. And sure, maybe the fans are a little jeery and maybe they're a little snarky, but we're going to go watch an NHL, one NHL team on the ice anyways, and I won't be as upset and be thinking about the fact that I'm buying a $6.50, you know, hot dog. So
right.
Now it's just gotten to the point where the perfect storm of things have happened. They've lost season ticket holders. The game day experience has never really changed. This is the time, in my opinion, that if you're a franchise like the Sabres, you start looking at, okay, we recognize the thing that people are coming here for is not going to be that good. Hopefully, it's a little more entertaining. Hopefully, people really buy into this youth movement that we got going on. But now is the time to say, let's knock it out of the park game day experience-wise. Let's do giveaways. Let's do buyback programs. Hey, you got an old jersey? We'll buy it back and give you a $30 credit towards buying a new jersey of Dylan Cousins.
I have a thought on this. Do you want to take a, do you want to take a call? We can take
a call.
Here.
Let's take a call.
Absolutely. Let's take a phone call. So Jerry has something to bring up, but I have some thoughts on the Bill Veeck nature of what you're talking about here because I watched something on YouTube about it. Hi, Jerry.
Jerry, what you got?
Hey, guys, you know, first of all, that Billy Leno team, I don't think made the playoffs, and I'll tell you why. The last game playoff game played in Buffalo was Easter Sunday 2011, which was the Billy Leno game, which convinced us to sign Billy.
Yeah, it was the previous year then, I think.
Yes,
right?
That would have been the 2010-2011 season. Yep.
Yes. Now, this needs a name. I mean, for the Bills, it was the drought.
Mm.
Is this a blight? Is this a tank hangover? What is it? It needs a name. It's gotten to the point where it needs a name.
A friend of mine has referred to it as the wormhole.
Mm.
Because it seems like we keep traveling around in this cycle of time and space and never seem to get out of it.
I like the blood clot.
The blood clot.
Well, we do have cholesterol problems, generally speaking, as a city.
The blood clot. Think about it. You know, even you could eat the healthiest diet, it might still come back.
Get to Gates, baby.
What is wrong with trying to rebrand something that worked very well in the, I think it was the late 90s, the hardest working team in hockey?
Mm.
You know, give out hard helmets. Like, you know, expect these young kids to work really hard.
Yeah, right. Jerry, and this is kind of my point about why I'm going today, is that like, the idea that these guys are miserable and they have nothing to play for, I don't get that sense at all. And I think it starts with the head coach. Listen, this team, for a lot of the bad decisions they've made over the past, you know, decade and a half, it sort of feels like they figured out the right coach for this team. Did they not? Like, that's at least, if we could say there's a really strong positive. I am really excited about the coach. Like, I like the coach.
I agree. I think... the last two coaches, again, I think are way too focused on defensive responsibility and systems. And, you know, young teams do not respond well to systems because you're still learning, and you learn from failure, not from not taking chances. And I'm going to tell you something about tomorrow's football game. What was one of the reasons that Edmonton was so good that we can learn something from tomorrow? Their offense went out there and said, score 5 or 6 goals because Moog or Fuhr are not letting it 5 or 6 in.
Right.
I need this to be a track meet tomorrow. Stop trying to control the game. And, you know, does one of you play golf?
Yeah.
Okay. I play very, very good golf. Do you want to play me for 1 hole or 18 holes on a bet? 1 hole.
Yeah.
You want to play me for 1 hole. You're not beating me for 18 holes. When you're the better team, you don't want to shorten the game. You want to lengthen the game.
Mm.
We did it for years with the Patriots once McDermott got here, trying to get, you know, like, oh, we got to control Brady. And we never beat them until recently.
That's true. We did literally never beat them, yeah.
But I thought we were the better team. Like, stop trying to shorten games. The Texas playoff game, we get 16-point lead, and then we try to shorten the game. Stop trying to shorten games. Lengthen games. I think we're the better team here. Lengthen the game.
I like where your head's at, Jerry. Thanks for the call, buddy. Thanks for listening and interacting with us this morning. I appreciate it. Yeah, it's... It's going to be a fun day today. I am looking forward to it.
Looking forward to Sabres hockey, folks, right here on WGR. Pregame starts at 2.
At 2 o'clock. 2 o'clock pregame.
Your favorites, Brian Koziol, Pat Malacaro. You got your Dane Dunleavy. You got your Rob Ray on the broadcast. Sabres Radio Network, baby. We love to see it, hear it, see it.
I'm going to bring a cowbell with me today, and I'm going to ring it. So that way on the broadcast, you can hear it. Like, is that a faint cowbell in the background? There's Nate. We know where Nate is.
Bring a trombone.
Trombone. Sad trombone.
That's cool. Sure. Or a happy one. Depends.
Well, I
play some show tunes. Why not? A little Hello Dolly.
It's time to go to break. And Matt Perino of New York Upstate joins us next and gets us away from this conversation as soon as possible.
Of WGR Sports Radio 550 again. Rewind up to 24 hours with Odyssey Rewind. Download the Odyssey app, select WGR, and go back in time. Driven by Northtown Automotive. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
All right, welcome back to Sports Talk Saturday here on WGR. I'm Nick Geary, Corey Griswold with you. We're on to some little less depressing things, like the Buffalo Bills, who are in a Sunday Night Football matchup against the Kansas City Chiefs. Did you know that? Were you aware of this? Did you know about it? Have you heard that the Bills are playing the Chiefs on Sunday? If you haven't, I don't know what you would be doing short of living under a rock, which is cliche. But speaking of cliches, let's talk about this game, because this game is probably going to be filled with pregame cliche as in the lead up into it. So Matt Perino joins me now on the Western Hotline to help me talk about this Bills and Chiefs matchup. Matt, you landed in Kansas City. What's the vibes, dude? What are the vibes?
A lot of Bills fans, but I'm wondering, like, you know, I got a 6 a.m. flight out of Buffalo, so I think that the full cavalry is probably en route still. So not too crazy yet, but I would imagine there'll be plenty of Bills fans out there tomorrow.
I would guarantee that. In fact, I saw something along the lines of like 20-30% of the secondary ticket sales have been coming from Western New York area codes. So on top of that, I mean, you have Bills fans around the country as well. So that's not just people coming from Western New York. So that'll be, I think, an interesting atmosphere regardless, Matt. But I'm wondering, maybe just like overall, when you're the lead up into this game, the week of this game. It feels like week one happened, and then it was, let's just get to Kansas City. And do you get that vibe that although the team, and we're talking about cliches, Josh Allen, you know, Sean McDermott, the most important game is the next game because it's the next game, right? And we kept hearing that. Do you buy that, or do you believe, too, that there was always sort of this eye on Kansas City like it has been in the fan base? Because the fan bases are really all they've cared about for the last 3 or 4 weeks.
I buy it from the perspective of what they always do inside the building there. Like, Sean McDermott's done that since he's been here. It's like ultra-focused on the opponent at hand. And in this league, I do buy into what he says when you start overlooking opponents or, like, not focusing on what you got to do that week. That's when you get beaten. So I believe that. But then we hear from Dawson Knox, who's on the Pat McAfee show yesterday, and he's like, listen, we're kind of probably speaking out of both sides of our mouth. Yeah, I'm focused on this game, and it's just one game. But listen, they beat us last year. There's stars. I mean, Emmanuel Sanders was talking about it this week that, you know, he'd come in here and watch tape with all of his teammates, and they raised their hands in the meeting rooms like, I could have done this better. I could have done this better. His bruises there still. He admitted it. And so, yeah, there's a little bit extra to this game and also what it means, Nate. I mean, I was listening to Aaron Schatz. He was on Show Up in the Bulldog the other day, and I saw his tweet earlier this week. It's like over 50% chance that the Bills get the one seed if they win this game. It drops all the way down to 20 if they lose it. I mean, a lot is on the line. If you want to go in the Super Bowl, this is, you know, we're no longer talking about playoff caliber. We're talking about championship caliber, right? That's where they're at now. Well, the best route to getting a championship is getting home field advantage in the playoffs, and that's why this one's so big.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's right. And I'm glad you sort of mentioned Dawson Knox, because that's a guy I think that's maybe hot right now in vogue, someone that is maybe most interesting to talk about. And Matt, there's a pretty clear and obvious shift after the things on offense that just did not work in week one. They really haven't gone back to that. We've seen a lot less Gabriel Davis. We've seen more Emmanuel Sanders and more Dawson Knox. Has there been a sense to you that shift is maybe for the best of this offense moving forward in terms of sustainability, even if it means stunting the potential on-field development of Gabriel Davis, which I think is, you know, the sort of the reality. For every, you know, three or four positives that we've seen from this team, you can look back and think about an effect that might be negative. And I look at the one thing that has shifted in this offense is essentially they don't use Gabriel Davis. And I'm wondering if that is something you believe that you like could be worried about. I know that he's still kind of fighting through an ankle injury. Maybe he's just not 100%. And when he is, he'll have more impact on the game. They are rotating receivers out. Like, you're not seeing Stephon Diggs or Cole Beasley play 100% of the snaps. But I guess I've been a little surprised to see as little of Gabriel Davis as I have. And I guess to maybe double down on that surprise, Matt, to see them have the success they've had without really utilizing him at all, I'm sort of interested in your thoughts on whether or not you believe that's stunting his development, and if short-term gains on the offense are worth potentially stunting his development.
No, like, I don't think it's stunting Gabriel Davis's development. And there's, like, a lot to unpack there. Like, I mean, going back to, you know, the offseason, I thought the Gabriel Davis role was going to reduce a little bit with Emmanuel Sanders coming in. I've been on the significant upgrade Emmanuel Sanders over John Brown train, you know, since they signed him, since that whole thing kind of unfolded in March. Emmanuel Sanders, like, you know, when I talk to people around the league about him, like people that have covered him, even some people that played in the league, like, you can't overstate the importance of what he brings just from a mindset perspective, the way he approaches the game, his experience. Like, they weren't going to bring Emmanuel Sanders, who basically said the other day, like 2 weeks ago, he's like, listen, I'm 34. This might be it, where I'm coming in here, I'm selling out to try to win, and I'm going to put up my peace sign at the end of the season. I'm going to go be on a beach somewhere. They're not going to bring him into the fold here and have him play fourth fiddle. I mean, this is a guy that has done things in this league, and he still is capable of those things. They're going to rely on that. Now, Dawson Knox, to me, that's an option that now Brian Daboll has in his tool chest. He can go to the Dawson Knox hammer in games and rely on him. I think he's earned that trust through the first four games. Is he going to be featured every week? Probably not. But I think they had to go out here early in the season and figure out, all right, where are we at with Dawson Knox? What do we have in him? If we give him opportunities, he's going to take advantage. He's done that. So you got that now. But I still think Gabriel Davis is a whole nother tool with a whole nother host of things that he can do and bring to this offense that we haven't seen yet. And I'm not worried about it. And if anything, everything that they've done so far, to me, with what we saw last year and what we've seen earlier this year, especially with the run game and the effectiveness that both Devin Singletary and Zach Moss have run with this year, I think there's so many options now for Brian Daboll. It comes down to him kind of, you know, maneuvering the strings a little bit and playing the right chords.
Matt Parrino here, New York Upstate Shout Podcast. Join me here on the Westher Hotline.
Breaking news, Nate. Breaking
what?
News.
What?
The Buffalo Bills have signed Taron Johnson to a 3-year contract extension. And it is perfect timing.
Wow.
Because I'm writing a big feature on Taron Johnson that will drop tomorrow morning on Syracuse.com and NewYorkUpstate.com. He earned it, man.
Has been so good. He has absolutely earned it, Matt. And, of course, we get breaking news right when we're on the radio here. And obviously, I don't believe we've seen – it just was reported. I bet we don't see numbers until maybe tomorrow or Monday. But, heck, let's talk a little bit about Taron Johnson, because I don't think there's been anybody on this defense that has quite earned the extension that he has, right? We've talked about, you know, is this team going to extend Tremaine Edmonds? That's still sort of sitting in limbo. But Taron Johnson getting to the podium before Tremaine Edmonds really isn't that surprising if we think about it, considering the position he plays and how important slot corners are in today's NFL with how passing offenses are. But B, his development over the last calendar year, Matt, has been one of the most notable ones. Like, his development model is sort of what everyone's hoping to see from, like, Ed Oliver.
Yeah, man. I mean, I've talked to Micah Hyde, Jordan Poyer, Jim Salgado, Leslie Frazier about Taron Johnson the last couple weeks. And, dude, everybody that talks about this guy, they just light up. I mean, he doesn't say a lot. Like, he's not a guy that comes in and is real showy. I mean, he's had big moments, right? I mean, we're 10 months removed from one of the biggest plays in the history of the Buffalo Bills franchise.
Yeah.
And he's just like a humble guy that comes to work. He's gotten really good at what I would argue is probably among the top three hardest positions to play in football. I mean, slot cornerback, the speed that you're dealing with, the change of direction. He's like, one of the things he was telling me when I was asking him about what do people like not know about playing the slot that, you know, maybe you deal with every day and makes it so tough. He's like, listen, if I get an outside receiver that comes in and plays in the slot, I'm like, I'm happy. I'm excited. I'm like, man, maybe I got more of a chance here because, you know, you see Tyreek Hill, you see Cole Beasley, you see the kind of guys he's got to go up against. He has a tough job, and to be one of the best at what he does at that tough job is such a ace in the hole for the Bills, and for them to reward him after the start early on this season, I think it says a lot about where he's at. And yeah, maybe it does put a little pressure on guys like Ed Oliver, and you know, I think Tremaine Edmonds has played a lot better than people give him credit for. But you know, big news on a Saturday before a big game.
Big news, I would say that for sure. Matt Parrino here on the Wester Hotline. I would be remiss if I guess it would be dumb of me to get you on here on this show, Matt, and not ask you about the matchup at quarterback tomorrow. And I don't think it's totally fair to love Josh Allen, but admit that in his two previous games against the Kansas City Chiefs, when it's required of him to be almost flawless, to be perfect, that he hasn't really shown up in that way. And how important is it to you? Let me phrase the question this way. If Josh Allen against the Seahawks, if Josh Allen against the San Francisco 49ers, if Josh Allen, you know, I don't know, name another game that you thought he just absolutely went off and went bananas last year. If that's the Josh Allen that shows up on Sunday, or A, if that's the Josh Allen that shows up in any given day, can the Bills be beat? Like, I know it's kind of a broad question, but like, I get the sense that there's a lot of people that believe if that's the quarterback that shows up, the ceiling Josh, the guy that plays at that level, they might be the best team in the league when he plays that way.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, if you get Seattle Seahawks Josh Allen, I don't see any team beating them. Now, listen, maybe the Kansas City Chiefs tomorrow night, you get Seattle Seahawks Josh and you get Super Bowl MVP Patrick Mahomes and we get treated to what I'm already predicting to be a game that ends with both of these teams, weather permitting, scoring in the 40s. But listen, Josh Allen, there's so many different ways that he can beat you. And I think that's like, you know, they put a lot on his plate. We've covered that quite a bit. The offense, the scheme, it's very complex. He's asked to do a lot at the line of scrimmage. I think what we saw last year against Kansas City was just a result of a little bit too much on his plate for that moment with the fans back in the building. Now, I'm interested to see what he learned from that and how he can apply what he learned to this game now. And I just think that with the way the Chiefs are playing, as bad as they've been against the run, with a group of cornerbacks outside of Snead who don't impress me, I don't think Tyrann Mathieu is necessarily in peak condition yet mm-hmm. either, and Chris Jones, who might not play, I think this is setting up for a really nice day for Josh Allen.
I do too. I just everything that I've watched of this Chiefs defense, they look like a shell of the team that they looked like last year defensively. I was listening to someone, maybe it was Jay Binkley, who I'll have on up at noon here. He covers the Chiefs in Kansas City, and essentially the talk around this was it has a lot of 2019 Kansas City vibes, where they lost in the AFC Championship game to Tom Brady and the Patriots, and you know you sort of look back or the 2018 team. I think it's 2018, 2019. Anyways, regardless, I'm thinking of this more and more that like. Patrick Mahomes can be the MVP and they still don't make the Super Bowl. Like that's how bad their defense has been.
Right. And like I'll play devil's advocate in the sense that like, you know, I think you're going to have Matt Verderam on. We had him on the show last night and I think he made a great point. He'll probably talk more about it. But like, you know, Steve Spagnuolo, you know, he's notorious for changing things around and kind of messing with things and you know, you might go into a game expecting one thing, and Brian Daboll even talked about that, and he throws a completely different thing at you. They've been playing a lot of zone. They haven't been as press-heavy early on in the season. How much do the Bills put in what they did against them in the AFC title game versus what they've done throughout the first four games? It's that balancing act. Are you ready for what they throw at you? And so, yeah, do I think that they've played pretty poorly, and if I'm the Bills' offense, I'd like my chances to have some success here? Sure. But you still got to hold up front. If Chris Jones plays, John Feliciano, Darrell Williams, they can't lose those matchups like they did last year. Because, you know, as good as Josh Allen was against Washington, and, you know, I thought that was the perfect example of how good he can be when he's at his best, making plays even in the face of pretty consistent pressure. If he's got to deal with that against Kansas City, Chris Jones is a completely different animal. He proved it already. And so, I'm not sitting here ready to say that this Kansas City defense is the version that we've seen over the course of a small sample size of four games.
Perino, thanks so much, my friend. Enjoy your afternoon and evening in Kansas City. We'll look forward to your Taron Johnson article that'll apparently be dropping soon. So we appreciate you, buddy.
Perfect timing. Thanks for having me, buddy. Talk to you soon.
Appreciate you. Matt Perino there of New York Upstate on the West Her Hotline. I'm going to take a quick timeout on the other side. Sal Capaccio is going to join us because he just broke some news about this Taron Johnson signing. So Sal will join us after a quick timeout here on WGR.
Back to throw, guns it into the end zone, intercepted! 2 yards deep in the end zone, intercepted by Taron Johnson, and he brings it out, and he's still on the run. He may go all the way. He's at the Baltimore 40, the 30, gets a block at the 20, 10, 5, touchdown! Touchdown! Taron Johnson goes 102 yards with an end zone interception, touchdown Buffalo!
It's one of my favorite Murph calls ever, and joining me on the West Her Hotline now to talk a little bit about the recent signing that just broke on Twitter moments ago. The Bills re-signing Taron Johnson to a 3-year extension, and Sal Capaccio on the Western Hotline now. Sal, I guess it's not really surprising news, but, you know, week 4 is over. We're on to week 5. I guess maybe this wasn't a move people were expecting kind of had to happen right now, no?
No, I think it was something that people figured the Bills would want to do, but probably take care of in the offseason, but you know, especially considering Brandon Bean kind of made it known that in Josh Allen's situation, they didn't want to do anything during the season, right? That would either be before the season or table. This isn't a Josh Allen situation. It's not that kind of money. It's not a quarterback distraction. But, you know, to do this during the season is really nice. And this just kind of underscores the relationship I think Brandon Bean has with, you know, agents of these players, the players themselves, to be able to get something like this done now so they don't have to worry about it when they get to January, February, and worry about becoming a free agent.
We likely won't have the final numbers on this contract sale until tomorrow or even Monday, but I think we could all assume that whatever this deal is, Taron Johnson is not going to exercise his right to go to free agency. The Bills don't have to worry about franchise tagging him or transition tagging, nothing like that. I would bet that they got this on a pretty team-friendly deal. I'm not going to ask you to sit here and speculate, but I think after just a track record of Brandon Bean locking up players like Matt Milano for, you know, under market value, it's probably safe to assume that this is probably going to be a contract that looks pretty good for the Bills.
Yeah, I mean, probably, right? We don't know the numbers, but here, I think more importantly is, like, think about how this team has gone about it. What Brandon Bean and Kevin Meagank and Jim Overdorf have done here is, when Josh Allen signed his contract extension, let's remember, they took away numbers from next year's salary cap, right? Like, it was actually reduced from what his fifth-year option would have been. Josh's fifth-year option was scheduled to count, what, 20-something million, and that was reduced by, like, $6-7 million. And at the time, okay, why are you doing that? Well, it makes sense now.
Yeah.
This allowed them to front load a little money here for Taron Johnson. I don't know, but it just makes sense. You know what I mean? It's all a puzzle, and it seems like obviously Brandon Bean is very in tune with, and like you said, Kevin Meagank and Jim Overdorf, they're all very good at what they do, and they're very in tune with how to put this puzzle together financially for this team to keep intact. You know, when you think about it, Nate, this defense has been together a while, and they're going to be together a while. Like, every single guy is locked up. The only two players I think of consequence at this point, I would say, that are scheduled to become free agents now at the end of the year are Jerry Hughes, and look, at his age, I don't know if we should really anticipate him re-signing, who knows, and Saran Neal, who's a backup. That's it. Every other starter is locked up multi-years after this year.
How unlikely would you have believed this extension would be if I were to ask you if Taron Johnson should be extended week 4 of last year, where I think it was week 4, right? Or was it week 3, where Taron essentially gets benched for Cam Lewis. Cam Lewis injures his wrist, and Taron Johnson gets put back in the starting lineup, and that's that, Sal. Like, it's sort of the rest is history. He has played almost a full calendar year of the best football of his career, and he's being rewarded for it. But I'm wondering, like, how unlikely you would have thought this was a full year ago.
Probably would have put it less than 50-50 a year ago, but still thought that, you know, hey, there's time here. Let's see where he develops. I think the biggest thing with Taron's been his availability. Right? If we would have known and see a crystal ball that Taron would then be able to stay available and healthy as he has, knock on wood, you know, I think that is the biggest issue with him and what the team has seen. You know, he's really, like you said, that was a turning point for him. I think, you know, really for him to mentally dial in and understand, you know, what it took to stay on the field, to keep his starting job after he lost it for that 1 week, and you know, Cam Lewis took it, but then he was out of the game. He got hurt. He comes back in, as you mentioned. I would have put it less than 50-50 a year ago, but I think the team has always anticipated, hey, you know, what's their philosophy? You know, we can say a lot about how coaches speak or GMs speak. The one thing you can never say about Brandon Bean is that he lies. He doesn't lie.
Yeah.
That is just true, which is we want to draft, develop, and retain. Think of all the guys they've done that with now, right? Which I know that the first draft he wasn't here for, but Tre'Davious White, Matt Milano, Deion Dawkins. Now you have Josh Allen, of course. Tremaine Edmonds, fifth-year option on him. Taron Johnson. They're drafting, developing, and retaining players.
Sal, last thing for you. In that matchup last year, the first matchup, not the AFC Championship game, we know Taron Johnson played in that game, but going back to that matchup in Week 5 of last year, do you suspect that we see, because we don't know what the situation is with Matt Milano. It, even if he does play, Sal, he's not going to be 100%. There's just no way based on the injury and what we know about hamstrings. And I heard you this week talking about how we know this team has historically handled hamstrings, which was to play it safe. And if that means missing an extra week in order to get back 100% healthy so you don't relapse that hamstring injury, the Bills have been sort of historically known to do that. How important is Taron Johnson in this matchup this week, particularly if Matt Milano can't go?
Oh, I mean, he's important every week, right? Especially because he's very good in the slot, obviously, no doubt about it. But, you know, Taron Johnson is going to have to be able to play a vital role in helping to, you know, the middle of the field, basically, there, where Matt Milano is going to have to play if he's playing or not. You know, look, I don't know if Matt Milano is going to play tomorrow. We'll find out if he's inactive 90 minutes before the game. Tomorrow's a really, really important game. You know what's more important? The rest of the season.
Yep.
They're not going to sacrifice putting Matt Milano out there. There's any indication that he could really re-injure himself. If he plays, that's because the team is very confident that that's not the case. But obviously, Taron Johnson is very big. Everybody, Jordan Poyer being healthy, you know, they're going to have all hands on deck. That hopefully includes Matt Milano, but if not, you know, obviously, you know, everybody else is going to have to step up their game as well. This is a really good signing. I mean, I was just thinking about how this team is really, Brandon Bean has just done it right, really has. I marvel at the fact of how he's put this team together and how he continues to keep this team together. All of their young studs are basically 27 and younger. I mean, and they're locked up. I just think this run is not gonna end anytime soon. I mean, this is a team that's gonna contend for championships for a while.
Sal, thanks for being on call, my friend. Appreciate you as always. Talk to you tomorrow at 4 p.m. for pregame.
Have a good weekend.
Awesome. Sal Capaccio there on the Western Hotline. Timeout. Jay Binkley coming up next here on WGR.
Factory Fresh RVs in stock, ready to hit the road. See America for less with thousands of RVs available for...
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.